Stein Online's live Clubland Q&A is just 1 minute away.
This is Mark Stein, back after four sellout voyages for the fifth annual Mark Stein Cruise. If you like the sound of April in Portugal and Spain on the fabulous new ship, the Celebrity Apex, well, you'll be at the apex of celebrity for our traditional week of sun, sea, and civilizational collapse. I'll have special guests from both sides of the Atlantic, including a reunion of all your favourite telly presenters from the glory days of GB News, who've since been sacked. And we'll do all the things you like about the Mark Stein Show and Stein Online, but close up and on water. More details at steinonline.com or marksteincruise.com.
The Stein Online Clubland Q&A begins right now. Here's Mark.
Hey, welcome along. December 18th, 2024. It is 3 p.m. North American Eastern Time, 4 p.m. in the beautiful Canadian Maritimes, 4:30 p.m. in fabulous Newfoundland and beyond the Americas, 8 p.m. in London, 9 p.m. in Berlin, where the government has collapsed, 10 p.m. in Kyiv. 11 p.m. in Damascus, 11:30 p.m. in Tehran. For all you Newfoundlanders who moved to Iran out of solidarity with the half-hour time zone, 1:45 in Kathmandu. For all you Iranians who moved to Nepal to check out the quarter-hour time zone, 4 a.m. in Singapore and Honkers, 7 a.m. in Sydney and Melbourne, which is not a terribly civilized hour for the kippers and kedgeree, 9 a.m. in Auckland, and even later in His Majesty's dominions across the Pacific. 400 years ago, December 18th, 1624, John Hull, the slave trader and early benefactor of Harvard, was born. Is Harvard marking the occasion by thanking Mr. Hull for plowing his slave profits into the university, or are they instead cancelling themselves in perpetuity? This is our last Q&A before Christmas, a week to go till the big day on Christmas Eve. We shall present another edition of what's become a Stein Online annual tradition, Christmas Eve Lessons and Carols, ancient scripture. That doesn't change much, but brand new live performances of your favourite carols and a few carols you maybe didn't know. Various friends of the Stein Show musical family will be here. I hope you will make a date for that. Thank you to Laura Rosen-Cohen for pinch-hitting last week. I think I'd mentioned the previous week that I was travelling. I used to travel all the time, used to travel a lot. But since one or two health problems, I'm going nowhere. Somebody help me. Somebody help me. Yeah, I'm barely staying alive. Maybe we should switch that out and make that the new theme tune. Anyway, the traveling is brutal these days. My foray into the outside world did not go well and clobbered me, and I'm not sure I'm quite back up to speed yet, but we will do our best. We will do our best. I can't put it any higher than that. Well, actually, probably I should put it higher than that. I should say it's going to be fabulous. Scott Scherzer writes from Miami Beach and says, "Dear Mark, while there is absolutely no justification for the murder of Brian Thompson, this is the United Healthcare chief executive, 50 years old, married with two kids, and they'll all be having a rather miserable Christmas this time next week. Brian Thompson was the CEO gunned down in Midtown Manhattan, just outside the Rockefeller Center Hilton Hotel. Brian Thompson, while there is absolutely no justification," says Scott Scherzer, "for the murder of Brian Thompson and the ensuing hero worship bestowed upon his killer, the health insurance industry is only itself to blame for its negative public perception. After all, they jumped at the chance to have a seat at the table and were all in on Obamacare. They were happy to endorse a law that would make the purchase of their product mandatory and would make the cost of any potential competition prohibitive. I assume that they fully understood that the Affordable Care Act was a deal with the devil, yet they made no effort to keep the devil at bay. Why the public hasn't shown the same venom toward the federal government for the current state of the nation's healthcare situation is a mystery. It is mainly due to government regulation that health insurance premiums continue to climb, and many claims are denied. Unless health insurance is able to untether itself from onerous regulation, costs will continue to increase and more services will be denied." Yeah, I don't disagree. I've had good cause, direct call. I mean, as I mentioned, I think earlier today, the University of Vermont Medical Center came close to killing me. They would have killed me if they'd been a little deeper into the interior of the United States. It was only because I was, 20 miles from the Quebec border and was able to get healthcare in a foreign country. And by the way, to the National Post did a story about a guy in his 30s who died under Canadian healthcare. So there'll be a lot of, just this week, so there'll be a lot of Canadians who are saying, what the hell is Stein talking about? Canada saved his life. Well, it wasn't quite as agreeable as my delightful Provençal nurses in France, but at least they gave me some healthcare. That lousy, what are they called? Blue Cross Blue Shield. They're in the witness protection program, so they have different names in every state. You know, so we pretend it's like a statewide business as opposed to a national racket. But Blue Cross Blue Shield, I think they charged $18,000 for that trip to emergency at the University of Vermont Medical Center. They charged me $18,000 for healthcare, a healthcare emergency in which I didn't get any healthcare. It's crap, you know. I mean, again, this is where the American exceptionalism thing doesn't really pan out, because no other country in the world sits around. You know, some people say, oh, I think the Italian system's quite good. Maybe we should make ours a bit more like the Italian system or whatever. No country on earth of the other 199 countries says, oh, we must create the same system that the Americans got. That's where all this stuff... I part company from the... Anyone who has, you know... I part company. First, because it's so expensive. Second, it has the most terrible health outcomes in the United States. When you've got falling life expectancy. You know, it's as basic as that. There's a lot of truth. Whatever you think of RFK, there's a lot of truth in the whole Make America Healthy Again proposal. That make America healthy again. And at this stage, you know, the Everybody's got stories like this. All the stories are different, but they all basically boil down to the same. It's incredibly expensive, and at least outside of a few elite institutions, nobody's arguing that, you know, the Cleveland Clinic isn't great at what it does or whatever. But most of, you know, if you're in a small state, the small states deteriorate to one-party states. So in New Hampshire, you've got Dartmouth-Hitchcock, and everything is an affiliate. Every other hospital, every county hospital or whatever, is an affiliate of Hitchcock. In Vermont, you've got the University of Vermont Medical Center, and all your little hospitals are affiliates of that. So that was when I had my problems with the UVMC. I couldn't even drive 10 miles to some little county hospital because I'm in the system as having been denied a blood transfusion. So I'm not, and I mentioned again earlier that when I spent a week in the ICU for my heart attacks in France, Blue Cross Blue Shield denied payment on the grounds that I hadn't given them sufficient notice that I needed the treatment. Well, the reason for that is that I was 15 minutes from death. So contacting Blue Cross Blue Shield or whatever middleman they're using, where you have to be on hold anyway for 45 minutes, I'd have been dead on hold trying to it doesn't... Look, there's no... Just speaking objectively, if you look at the health of American kids, let's not even get into the grown-ups. You know, just the kids are unhealthy. And America is actually... so there has to be another. Now, where I part company from Scott is he's talking about whatever it was before Obamacare came in. I can't remember. What the big thing was called then. But that was another racket. It basically goes from one racket to another racket. And Scott makes this point. They were happy to endorse a law. They were happy. They fully understood that the Affordable Care Act was a deal with the devil. Yet they made no effort to keep the devil at bay. Why would they? These aren't doctors or nurses. These are people who make maximize the money to be made in healthcare. And there is this idea again that there's people like Ted Cruz, who should know better, say, you have choice. Most people don't have choice. It's all, you're out of network and you're not, you know, you can't actually, if you like your doctor, you can keep your doctor. It's all bollocks. And it's expensive bollocks. There's no market rate. You know, if the people who run American healthcare ran your local multiplex, it would cost you $473 to go and see a matinee of Cardboard Man 43. It doesn't work, and it doesn't work in the most by the most basic healthcare metrics. So it really does need, and I hope RFK knows the whole thing's a racket, that the people who have the ear of health and human services, like the people who have the ear of the Department of Education, like the people who have the ear of the Department of Defense, are all in on the racket. So it takes a lot to try and reverse it. But again, you know, to go back to Scott's point, while there is absolutely no justification for the murder of Brian Thompson, people hate the healthcare system there. It's not a private system. In most countries, Canada doesn't have this. Canada is the same situation, same system as North Korea. But most countries, they have a private system and they have a public system. You know, there's a private system that's private and there's a public system that's public. In America, the public and the private systems have all got jumbled up, and it's a one great dysfunctional push me pull you, and that's certainly true. You know, as I always used to say on Rush, insurance in most of the world is supposed to insure you against disaster. In America, insurance is the disaster. These rates for I'm supposedly the best. I told my general practitioner, my GP in New Hampshire, this the other day, I will never set foot in an American hospital ever again. I'm just not going to bother sitting around in emergency at UVMC or Dartmouth Hitchcock or whatever. I'm just going to, if anything is seriously the matter with me, I'm going to do what I eventually had to do after that night at UVMC and go and seek treatment in a foreign country. Aside from anything else, it was a lot cheaper for me as a non-resident to get my blood transfusion at the Royal Victoria in Montreal than it was at UVMC, where I've had to pay $18,000 not to get a blood transfusion. I mean, this is the fact of the matter is these are all. You know, when people talk about budgetary matters and all the rest of it, Americans pay a lot more for this system. And people like, you know, Rudy Giuliani made the point that, you know, there are certain, I mean, for some, there's a sort of laziness about comparisons. People tend to, in both Canada and America and Britain, tend to compare their systems with other English-speaking countries. And often you'll find that, you know, I would say, for example, you know, I've been pleasantly surprised because I've had heart attacks in of one to one degree or another in half a dozen countries. And so you get to learn how to play comparisons. But this is, you know, there's a lot of, it's fantastic. I'm not even bothered so much by this thing showing that 42% of people under 30 think the assassination of a health insurance executive is acceptable. I'm more disturbed by the one that's the core number, polling people at 20, 30, 40, 50, up to 112 if they're still kicking around, where a third of them, close to a third of them, only two-thirds, 68%, are prepared to say that assassinating health insurance executives is unacceptable. People don't like it. And that's a bit, and this being locked into, the Democrats want to introduce one size fits all socialized healthcare. So we are committed to giving you choice, where you're paying, $12,000 a month and you're out of network if you go 5 miles in any direction. People hate it. People hate it, and if you were designing a healthcare system, you would never start with this model. Ross Spence writes, funny how there wasn't an immediate outcry for more gun control after the healthcare CEO was gunned down. Just a surge of he had it coming to him. This is just like the response after Trump was almost assassinated. Yeah, that's very true. If you think about the fella who shot at Reagan, and then and then Republicans back in those days. Republicans were, it was a gun control issue, and they had the Brady Bill and all the rest of it. Nobody cares. This is why we are still a month out from the inauguration. And it's interesting to me that Trump won't trust the FBI to do background checks for the various figures he's nominated. And I think he's correct on that. The question then is, I think he's absolutely right. The FBI needs, as I've said for some years, all during, you know, when certain Fox News personalities were doing all the rah, I know the, sure there's one or two rotten apples in there, but the average G-man is a straight shooting, you know, all this rubbish. I said, no, it can't be reformed. It's got to be abolished and replaced by something with far more circumscribed powers. That's also true of the Department of Justice. It's also true of the Bureau of Prisons. It's also true of the Internal Revenue Service. It's true of a lot of things. I mean, I think where did I say this? I said this somewhere or other the other day. Is there any, because I was looking at the way West Point basically decided to screw over Pete Hegseth. And because it's an American military operation, whichever highly decorated 27-star general came up with that plan is so talented, he should really be running the Afghan war, the Ukraine war, the Syrian liberation struggle, or whatever's next down the pike, because they failed to foresee. It's crap on stilts. West Point failed to foresee that Pete Hegseth might have kept his acceptance letter. And I said, and this is a serious thing, actually, a serious point. I said, is there any American government outpost that isn't now wholly corrupted? You know, I had that experience that this is just the way the world works. That's how I, you know, try to see what happened to me almost a year ago in the District of Columbia. It's a company town. The company is government. Everyone works for the government except for people who are dependent on government or either for, you know, welfare or dependent on government for the contracts for their own business. That's just the reality. And the reality of the reality of the corrupt permanent state is such that it needs dismantling or it will collapse America. I mean, that's actually, the Department of Defense is the model for America. It accounts for 40% of the planet's military spending, and it can't win anything. It can't win anything. It had the we just saw the United States military, 40% of military spending around the planet. They picked a fight with Pete Hegseth, who's been dismissed. Oh, he's just some like Fox News weekend pretty boy. He's not even one of the big weekday guys. He's just some weekend pretty boy. Oh, yeah? Well, your 40% of the planet's military spending couldn't beat the Fox News weekend television pretty boy. That's how crap you are. And that's why they need someone who's going to go in and dismantle all this. Raymond Kujawa writes, hello, Mark. Best to you and your family this Christmas holiday season. I'm going to play devil's advocate on this notion of reforming healthcare via demonizing healthcare CEOs. Could this get we in America, I think that should be us in America, get we in America, to give up on our mixed private and public insurance so that we give up on private insurance, aka all Obamacare all the time. Wouldn't the advantage to that be that if you were denied coverage and had an axe to grind about it, there wouldn't be any CEOs to off, just some nameless, faceless bureaucrat whom nobody could identify. So you just quickly give up and off yourself, which is certainly true under the Canadian system. Well, I think it's close to 5% of Canadian deaths now are government-assisted suicides. Quite extraordinary. Actually, it's not extraordinary. It's quite evil. It's one of those things. It's like slicing the breasts off middle school girls and making them infertile. It's one of those things that has me doing that our visa baddies routine. This whole thing of mixed private, mixed public, there should, if it's going to be a private system, it should have a market rate. You know, the market rate for getting an X-ray is ridiculous. As I've pointed, I actually ran the numbers after I made the mistake. Oh, well, I didn't make the mistake. I had to get an X-ray at that, in early January before your deductibles kicked in. For non-Americans, I apologize for using these words that don't basically exist in any other healthcare system. But anyway, the early part of the, you've got a, oh, well, I've got a plan with a high deductible. Oh, yeah, that's great. For the cost of the X-ray, I was charged at Littleton Hospital in northern New Hampshire. I could have flown first class from Boston to Hamilton, Bermuda. Not Hamilton. Where's the airport? I've forgotten the name of the town where the airport's in. Anyway, St. George, is it? Anyway, I could have flown from Boston to Bermuda first class, put up at the Princess Hotel, named, as I'm sure everybody listening knows, named for Princess Louise, for whom Lake Louise and Alberta are both named. Where am I? That's what I should be getting treated for. Unfortunately, Blue Cross Blue Shield doesn't cover monarchical maundering. I could have flown to Bermuda first class, put up at the Princess Hotel, had my X-ray at the King Edward VII Hospital in Bermuda, stayed on for a few days afterwards, sunning myself, and then returned to New Hampshire and still come out ahead. That's how there's no market rates for X-rays in there. Don't get me started. Anyway, I'm in a bad mood with it because, of my experience with the UVMC and Blue Cross Blue Shield. But, you know, we should have there should be a genuinely public option and a genuinely private option. The government is in all the healthcare systems in America. So when Ted Cruz says you have a choice, yeah, you have a choice of how government screws you over on your health insurance. Some ape in paradise, possibly not his real name, says the alleged health insurance CEO slayer may be getting a free ride in social media opinion, in part because some online find him cute. God spare us from a despot with GQ model looks. Yeah, you know, that Adolf Hitler, he was pretty dreamy, don't you find? He just looked fabulous. The chicks were crazy for him. And speaking of those getting an unearned boost via looks, consider our hapless PM. I take it you're writing from the Dominion of Canada, because I don't see anybody hailing the looks of Sir Keir Starmer. What will be his fate now that his mediagenicity has worn thin? Politicians, can we get something straight? I know I said we'd cut the music so we could talk more about who's 2 points up in Iowa. In case you don't notice, being prime minister is just the stepping stone to a much cushier job now. Like Dame Jacinda from New Zealand quit being Prime Minister of New Zealand and has been wafted onward and upward to something or other. You know, when Klaus Schwab said, "We penetrate the cabinets," when he boasts about penetrating Justin Trudeau or Chrystia Freeland. When he boasts about penetrating all the Western leaders, that's because these people are not important. They have their phases and they have their uses. It's exactly the same as celebrities. You know, these guys are celebrities, and then for one reason or another, they outlive their usefulness and they go and they find some other guy. Politics is and politicians certainly are becoming almost entirely irrelevant. Queen of the day. So yeah, get excited about Chrystia Freeland. Oh, will Chrystia Freeland topple Justin? If there's an Allmark sign show on which my dear friend Naomi Wolf was on, and Naomi is making a point about Chrystia Freeland, you know, whom she's known for years. I first met her in London probably close to 30 years ago. And she's just some, you know, at that time she was the assistant under deputy sub-editor of the Financial Times in London. And then she gets promoted to deputy editor of the Globe and Mail in Toronto. And you just, and she's, so she's just, and that's who she is. She's just some sort of third rate kind of editor who's around, like a lot of people. And then next, and so Naomi's talking about this, saying she'd run into Chrystia at these events all over the place. And next thing, she wakes up and she sees there's a story in the Washington Post that the Deputy Prime Minister of Canada's coming to town. And she's thinking, oh, yeah, who's that? And it turns out to be, as I said, you know, someone who was a minor editor at the Financial Times and then a minor editor at the Globe and Mail. Doug Cole, oh, he's all excited about Chrystia Freeland too. What do you make of Chrystia Freeland? For the full hour, Chrystia Freeland. We're beyond politics now. What do you make of Chrystia Freeland jumping off the low in the waterline Trudeau ship of state? Is it the straw that will break the woke boy prince's tenure over Canada? As always, looking forward to hearing your thoughts on this or pretty much anything you wish to opine upon. Well, can we talk about the Dream Ballet in Oklahoma? Owen Morgan writes, Keir Starmer has been British Prime Minister since the 5th of July. He has always managed, okay, possibly the wrong verb, to wreck the country, even beyond the mess made by... I'm being serious, by the way, on this business about these politicians. Because she was the very model of the World Economic Forum. You know, she was as I said, you know, Naomi and I and Chrystia all grubbing around at these third-rate media events hither and yon. And at one of them, she's plucked from, you know, they don't say, oh, Naomi. Oh, that Stein guy. They never say that. They say, oh, Chrystia Freeland, we're going to pluck her from obscurity and groom her at the World Economic Forum where Klaus Schwab penetrates the cabinets. Owen Morgan says, Keir Starmer has been British Prime Minister since the 5th of July. He's always managed, okay, possibly the wrong verb, to wreck the country, even beyond the mess made by Cameron, May, Johnson and Sunak. He is 4.5 years before he needs to go to the country, as we say in the UK. What will be left before we finally have the chance to vote him out? Well, this is why I sometimes sound cranky, because the urgency is such now that we really do, you know, the idea of taking 4.5, when there's like 1,000 Albanians walking into your country every day, it's very difficult. The net migration into, if you take away the people who leave the country, people who come into the country and subtract the people who leave the country, as a lot of English, Scots, Irish and Welsh are doing, then you get the net migration figure for the last year of Tory rule, which was just under 1 million. So if you're wondering, I find it very depressing when you fly. I one of the reasons why, you know, we read on Tales for Our Time, we do a lot of English middle-brow novels. One of the nice things about them is their evocation of an England that was still England. It wasn't all congested, you know, because they're wherever this is going on now, it's in the East Midlands, is it? I think a couple of Islamic billionaires are building the British Isles' biggest Muslim cemetery. You know, the whole country is becoming clogged and congested. People can't afford to buy houses. People can't get into schools. People can't get into hospitals. That's the trouble with saying, oh, well, okay, we lost this time, but let's wait another 4 or 5 years and this time we'll get. The trouble is, on the 4 or 5 years of 1,000 Albanian sex traffickers a day, you're losing the country. You only need to lose a couple of electoral cycles and you lose the country. And that's the situation that the United Kingdom, the United States, Canada, and much of Europe is in right now. Olga writes from Arizona, Joyeux Noël, Monsieur Stein, and clubbers worldwide. Curious as to your thoughts on the Nigerian young lady now leading the Tories in the UK. Everyone seems to think she could be the saviour the party so badly needs. But will the old guard let her actually do anything useful? No. Again, we're getting into the... Chrystia Freeland is positioning herself to be the saviour that Canada needs, right? This is how these guys think of themselves. But in the end, here's my problem. A Canadian Tory like Stephen Harper, he didn't make everything worse. He just didn't reverse the things that had been made worse. So he's a classic example of what Mrs. Thatcher used to call the ratchet effect, where, you know, the left goes hell for leather, or whatever the expression is, in pursuing its agenda, and then the right win the election and they don't reverse it. They just, you know, don't actually pursue the left's agenda. We've evolved from that since the time back in the 90s when I had a rather boozy late night conversation. Mrs. Thatcher was fantastic after a few drinks, actually. A rather boozy late night conversation with her on the subject of the ratchet effect. But we don't have that now. The Tories spent the last 14 years making everything worse in the UK. Now, I don't mind Kemi Badenoch, and I understand, you know, I can see why J.D. Vance was putting his arm around her, they had a very friendly photograph. But as I said, I'm all about the urgency now. The time for saying we can afford to take the next 10 to 20 years to do things is too much. And I think the Tory party is just over. You can't betray your base for 14 years and then they say, oh, well, look, now they've nominated the 57th new leader since 2010. Maybe this will be the one that does the trick and goes back to some Tory policies. You know, I've got no reason to be, friends with Nigel Farage after what happened at GB News. There's some other GB News guy. What's the name of the GB News guy who's just been booted out to... Oh, Mark Dolan. Yeah. couldn't happen to a nicer guy. But I like the way Nigel criticizes for people for not being a team player. On Team Nigel, there's Nigel, and that's it. Having said all that, Nigel, he's Mr. Gatekeeper, and he won't go near Tommy Robinson, and he won't do this, and he won't do that. But he hasn't actually spent 14 years screwing over his base. And she's not my concern. If you're just looking at her in terms of what a party leader has to be able to do, like hold their own at the dispatch box and Prime Minister's Question Time, she's not impressive on that front. Now, that might be, you know, she could make the case that people say, oh, maybe she's too nice. Well, actually, maybe being nice will be enough. You never know. You never know. But I think it would be better to use this opportunity to destroy the Tory party. And I have no great regard for Nigel Farage, but if he were to succeed in doing that, that would be impressive. Aaron Everett says, Mark, joyous Christmas to you. I do hope you'll replay your lessons in carols this holiday. It's a genuine favourite. It's not a replay. I mean, it sounds a bit like a replay because all these biblical verses, we do the King James version. So when we don't do these modish rewrites that the other versions do, where the most familiar scripture sounds, you know, gets rewritten every 20 minutes. We don't do any. We just do the King James version. The scripture stays the same, but we shake up the carols. Sometimes we'll take a carol we've done and give it to somebody new. I think we've got a couple of those coming up. And sometimes we'll take a carol we haven't done and give it to somebody old. And sometimes we'll get a both a new singer in and a new carol. And we've got examples of all three on this year's show. So it's not a replay. You're welcome to listen to replays, but no, we will be doing that. The apparatus of that's become a Christmas Eve tradition for a simple reason. I think we need, you know, I was looking at some event somewhere and all this business about, you know, liberal humanism in Europe or whatever. Liberal humanism is the void, unfortunately, that Islam has filled. And Ayaan Hirsi Ali, who from being a very famous and rather militant atheist, has become a believing Christian. But that's one reason we do that show. We started it during the COVID just for people who, I mean, quite disgracefully, the churches agreed to lock their doors during the COVID. So we wanted to ensure that at least people could have a listen on the air, which isn't the same thing at all. But every society requires a transcendent meaning to survive. I mean, Nicholas Eberstadt, I think this is in Foreign Affairs, has just written a piece on how, for the first time, global population is going to be shrinking. And people will say, oh, that's great, but almost all the population growth on the planet is going to come from Islam and sub-Saharan Africa. They're going to account for a higher and higher proportion of global population, and Europe will count for less and less. And it's even, you know, it's really bad in places like South Korea, where the fertility rate is down to 0.6. I think it's 0.64. So the fertility rate in South Korea has to double just to get to the standard measure of lowest low fertility, which is 1.3 children per woman. 1.3 children per woman. That's a level of fertility from which no society has ever recovered. And South Korea's half that. So the world we're going to be moving into, and this is why talking about democracy, for example, is going to become more and more difficult. Because what will happen is if you have something like what Biden did the last 4 years, where you've got basically twice the population of Norway has walked in across the Rio Grande. If you democracy, voice of the people and all the rest of it, it's going to be very hard to argue when the 11 million people. And I love the way the bollocks in America. No one's interested in this question. It just determined the result of the election. But for as long as I can remember, and this is going back like 25, 30 years now, they've always said, oh, well, there are 11 million undocumented undocumented immigrants in the country. Okay, so it's been 11 million since 1992 or whatever. 11 million walked in the last 4 years, you know. The stupidity of this of public discourse is beyond a point at which I can be bothered with it now. Anyway, the apparatus of Washington, continues Aaron Everett, seems intent on leaving Mr. Trump with nothing to transition into after the Armageddon. I don't think it's just about being caught at their crimes. Preemptive pardons, a laughable two words to say next to each other, will take care of that. This feels like a temper tantrum from a teenager who's mad at mom and dad for their own actions. The difference won't be a slammed door, but a destroyed world. I hate the 9,000-month transfer of power. It's antiquated and unnecessary and provides opportunity for these very moments. What do you think the real motivation is for destroying the world on their way out the door? Blessings and good tidings. You are a true joy in my own world and it's much appreciated. Thank you very much for that, Aaron. The thing about this is that, and this is true in America, it's true in Britain, it's true in France. The elections aren't going to do it, because nothing that needs to change can be permitted to change. Now, if you have, as Aaron says, a 9,000-month peaceful transfer of power, in theory, you would have that would be equivalent to a caretaker government. After Boris Johnson announced, for example, that he would resign as soon as a new Tory leader had been elected, Liz Truss. The thing about a caretaker government is they take care of it. They keep things ticking over, but they don't actually initiate new things. Generally speaking, it used to be considered unseemly for a caretaker government to initiate, say, World War III, as these guys seem to be doing. But the point is that doing anything about anything that matters, like closing the border, for example, is something they don't want to happen, or pulling or just saying, look, we're very sorry, Ukraine, but all your guys are dead now. You got nobody to fight the war with. And for some reason or other, you keep blowing up your allies' pipelines. So we'd rather just take a back seat and see how this one plays out. Instead of doing that, they're determined to expand the Ukraine war so that you can't pull out, and if necessary, use it to crank up World War III. But the basic, it's about the West. It's not about all these other places. You know, the Afghan war perfectly summarized the mad state of the world, because we're fighting for 20 years over completely worthless bits of sod no one gives a crap about, while at the same time surrendering in Europe and North America some of the most valuable real estate on the planet. That's the madness of the world. And these guys are determined that Trump shouldn't change things. Okay, we got lots more of your questions, and we're going to come back to all those questions in just 30 seconds or so on Stein Online's Clubland Q&A live around the planet. But here's the bit you've been waiting for. Special appearance by Mark Stein to tell you all about our weekend music show. Hey, this is Mark Stein with an extended edition of our Sinatra Sextet, a full hour of festive Frank across half a century with friends and family, plus some insights from his songwriters and a special appearance by a Bond villain. Sinatra for the Season, On the Town, Saturday at 5 on Serenade Radio. And 5 o'clock London time is 6 p.m. in Western Europe, or 12 midday North American Eastern. That's Festive Frank on Saturday, our seasonal song of the week on Sunday, And on Tuesday, our annual tradition of Christmas Eve lessons and carols. Not a replay, as Aaron says, but ancient scripture with brand new live musical performances. And if you're keeping track, there is one carol that can be heard on all three of those shows. Kelly Harbison says, "Dear Mark, Trump and Musk want to trim $2 trillion from the budget each year." America, the federal government of the United States, using numbers. Using numbers like that, $2 trillion would wipe out all, basically all discretionary spending. Kelly says this could conceivably pay down a substantial percentage of the national debt by the end of J.D. Vance's second term. Do you think that there is any chance of this happening? No. I mean, that would be a fantastic number because, as I said, it's basically equivalent to all discretion. There's this thing, which maybe non-Americans don't understand, between quote-unquote discretionary spending, which I regard as an abomination to any serious form of self-government, as it has proved in America, because it used to be when the Westminster system functioned, which admittedly it isn't doing so in London or Ottawa or Canberra or many other places at the moment. But when it did function, it's a basic principle that, you know, a parliament can't bind its successor. But that's basically the system that's been adopted in America, because you have all this so-called entitlement spending, which isn't in the least bit discretionary. And so you can have all your fiscal hawks and your budget hawks and all the rest of it, and they can't actually touch the preponderance. Now, as a proportion, they can only touch so-called discretionary spending. All the rest just chunters on. And it used to be that discretionary and getting bigger, like a snowball, like I used to sing when I did Marshmallow World, get out and roll it along. Well, entitlement spending rolls along all by itself. You don't need to push it. And trying to roll it back is what's difficult. And so when you elect a congressman, you're I did civics in an American public school, and the House of Representatives has the power of the purse. Oh, yeah? Well, they can't touch. They can only, I think at the moment, discretionary spending is, it used to be about half, and it's declined. It's getting on for a third now. But it's basically in decline, and that's the only thing you're representing. So what's the point of electing a congressman to serve in the people's house, the house that has the power of the purse, when he can't do anything about two-thirds of the federal budget? This is ridiculous. I would love to see $2 trillion cut from the budget every year. It would mean after like 3 years, we'd be basically, running a very light load like the Somali national government. And I'd be happy to try that. Steve from Manhattan says, "Mark, great to have you back. Is there any truth to the rumor that the Joseph Robinette Biden Presidential Library will be designed to look like a shower stall? How about the rumor that Joe Biden's memoir will have the title, 'Why Did You Turn Your Head?'" Biden's, if you compare this to this isn't working for the media. Stephanopoulos doing his thing about Trump is a convicted rapist. And Joe Biden's out there doing it all on camera. He showers, by his own account, he showers with everybody. He showers with his dog. He showers with his children. He showers with his Secret Service detail, and they don't let him be shot. So I guess those guys, the guys in the reflector shades with the telephone cord hanging out of the air, enjoy seeing Joe Biden naked. Maybe I can't be bothered. He's not. You know, the thing about this is he's the president at the moment. Have you heard anything about him? Kamala Harris is still the vice president. She's checked out. You know, again, we're engaging in a right now, for the last 4 years, it's been a charade. This was my big disagreement with Lionel Shriver. But Lionel Shriver said, oh, you know, her thing about Kamala. Oh, well, yeah, she's too big a nitwit to be running anything. Oh, so that's great. You want to participate in an act of self-government, going to the polling station and casting a vote in the knowledge that your candidate isn't really going to, your candidate for chief executive of the United States isn't going to be a chief executive of anything. You know, at some point, this is true across the West. Well, and actually the West goes a lot further east than it used to because we've had pretty dodgy electoral interference in certain of the liberated states of Eastern Europe, like Romania now. But basically, the peoples of the West have to reclaim their right to self-government. And because, you know, it's terribly, there's no point going along with this sort of pathetic simulacrum of self-government. We've got we had an interesting question on, this is the one I wanted. Yeah. Peter says, as to the UK and Canada, this is relevance to America too. Even if they succeed in installing as Prime Minister Farage and Poilievre respectively, is it already too late? That is, even if both nations are successful in curbing the ongoing Camp of the Saints invasion, are the demographic consequences, given the known differences in birth rates that you have discussed at length, beyond the tipping point as of today? If so, what is the point of bailing water out of a sinking ship? That is true that if you close the borders today, the United Kingdom is still set for an Islamic future. And people argue about, I had all this about, Islam would become a majority in the United Kingdom. It doesn't, as even the most obtuse person must have seen, it doesn't have to become a majority anytime soon. Once it gets up around 10 to 15%, you have to take it into account. And once you start having to take it into account, your country is going to be less free. If you're all in favor, oh, I love the diversity. I just love it. If you're like Kenneth Clark, the former Lord Chancellor, who says it's so nice because when he was a child, you hardly ever saw a person who wasn't some pasty Anglo-Celt on the bus. And now the bus is full of them. But he wouldn't know. He never rides the bus. You have to ride the bus. I like Sweden for the Swedes and Denmark for the Danes and Somalia for the Somalis. And I the fact of the matter is that if you don't want an Islamic UK or an Islamic Canada, the options now are pretty serious ones. You're going to have to talk about mass deportations. You're going to have to talk about paying people to go. And the fact of the matter is that even the far, quote unquote, far right, like Nigel in the UK, are not willing to go there. So that being the case, if you have these demographic trends and far right leaders who are, in fact, a generation behind where people need to be if they're going to prevent this outcome, then you pick a Muslim country you like and figure out, maybe we can persuade them to be like Malaysia. That's going to be the choice. Norman Fenton says, Mark, what's your take on why previously sensible people like Tucker Carlson and Candace Owens suddenly decided to start interviewing unchallenged Holocaust deniers, anti-Semites, and globalist anti-Israel freaks? In the case of Owens, especially, she seems to have decided that all the evil in the world is the fault of the Jews / Zionists. I don't really know anything about Candace Owens. I never watched her show when it was on Ben Shapiro's thing. I don't really know. I know she's an attractive and successful woman, and I believe, if memory serves, that when I was guest hosting for Tucker at Fox, we had her on, or maybe it was that other show when I was doing the one that used to be on before Tucker, the 7 o'clock one. One of those shows I had Candace Owens on, and she's a very fluent and as Norman says, at that time, sensible person. Tucker, I'm not Tucker has guests on who ought to be controversial, but he just introduces them as, oh, the best historian in America today or whatever, and lets them do all the talking for an hour. Now, if you were looking at it from Tucker, I don't think I'm giving anything away here, but people who cross Tucker doesn't like it if you make the mistake of getting on the wrong side of him. And the reality is that I was interviewing him. That's how crazy it was. I was interviewing him on Fox, and he started talking about the Great Replacement. And the Anti-Defamation League demanded that he be fired. Now, he laughed that off, as he laughed off all the attempts by people to get him fired, until eventually they succeeded. But, you know, those people, the official Jews, as Ezra Levant calls them, the official Jews are their own worst enemies in that. They're super gatekeepery. That guy who, whatever he was, who was moved on by the coppers because he decided he was a Jew who wanted to see what one of these Gaza things was like. And he's the peelers intercepted him and said him being so visibly Jewish in public was very provocative. Now, he's in the right on that. But on the other hand, the minute Tommy Robinson popped up to do with something or other, he then, the Jew who's being told to move on because he's too Jewy looking, immediately said, oh, we're nothing to do with Tommy Robinson. You know, again, the official Jews have been their own worst enemy on a lot of this. And I will say one thing. I will say one thing, too. The fact is that the whole there are significant numbers of Europeans and North Americans who don't understand, I'll put it no higher than that, who don't understand why the most significant consequence of the Holocaust is that, having killed all their Jews, Europe then decides to abase itself before Islam. So to say, oh yeah, we saw, oh, you know, 80 years ago we were beastly and killed all the guys with the synagogues. So now instead, where the synagogues used to be, we're going to let them build mosques. And there is still far too much among the official Jews of just venerating mass immigration, which as a practical consequence boils down to mass immigration from Islam. Now, I don't know. I don't know Candace Owens. I've met her once on the air, and I think I met her once off air somewhere or other. But I think that might be a generational thing, that I think the reality is that if you're, you know, certainly, say, half my age, the high water point for what happened a generation ago in America, the start of the War on Terror, which America and the West have lost. But it didn't seem like it was going to be lost in 2001. It seemed like America was serious about it and would win it. And at that time, the Jews' best friends anywhere on earth outside Israel were evangelical Christians in America. And one thing you notice since October the 7th is the silence of the evangelical Christians. Are the old timers are still there pitching for Israel? But the younger generation that's come along does not take that view. I find then there are other things. It was interesting. I read an interesting piece today by Simon Sebag Montefiore, who is actually a sort of third or fifth cousin of mine. But he's talking. I mentioned this. I brought this up with our friend Anne Magliani because it was the last pogrom the only pogrom really in the modern era. In what was then the United Kingdom, the little bit of the United Kingdom that it took place in actually is now with those fellas in Dublin. So it's no longer in the United Kingdom. So I was like doing my best. This was during the trial. I was just like having a laugh and trying to wind up Anne McElhinney about this. But my relatives were in that pogrom in Ireland, as were Simon Sebag Montefiore's, and in fact, you know, we're intermarried via the Jaffe family. Ireland has quite a lot of countries. It doesn't take much for the subliminal anti-Semitism to come bubbling to the surface. And then you get into all these nitwit discussions about, oh, well, I'm not anti-Semite, I'm not an anti-Semite, I'm just anti-Zionist and all this kind of thing. The fact of the matter, though, is that it's simple for most of the people who count in the Europe and North America, this is simple demographic arithmetic. Now, what you've got in the UK, for example, where you've got five people, it's as big as the Reform Party. It's a party that's basically sitting as Gaza independence. So here's the thing. This is why saving Britain's going to be difficult, because these guys from these independent MPs for whom the leading issue in a decrepit and decaying United Kingdom, their leading issue is Gaza, they managed to elect as many members as the Reform guys did in the last election. That's the hill that Nigel Farage has to climb. But I don't think, you know, I think about that pogrom in Ireland just because it's part of my family history, and I would not. And then I look at what's going on. I went to see the school, the Jewish school in Toulouse, that was shot up by some jihad guy. And it's on the same street as a regular French government school. And they're both primary schools. So you find the street goes up a hill. It was certainly a hill for me. I probably couldn't do it now in my present condition. But that, you see the French primary school in Toulouse is on the right. And that looks like a schoolhouse that you would see in an American school. It's got, you know, it's all in primary school type colours, you know, like bright Sharpie colours. And there's a giant pencil and there's a giant eraser and there's all, so it's all, and it's open. And you walk 200 yards past that and you come to the Jewish primary school on the left, and it looks like an armed camp. And that's because, and they've had to, in Toulouse, which is a major French city, they've had to consolidate all the synagogues into one central synagogue that has to be policed, not by policemen, but by soldiers, French soldiers with machine guns. I had a very pleasant conversation with the guy. And, you know, because I couldn't just go into the synagogue. I had to get past the French soldier with the machine gun. And that's how French Jews live now in the Europe of 2024. And so the problem I have is that I have really minimal interest in any in Palestinian nationalism, because these guys, it's now over 30 years since the Oslo Accords, and these guys haven't built a state. So we know that any Palestinian state is just going to be whatever it is, the 59th Islamic crap hole in the world. And I couldn't care less about that. You know, if they gave any indicator, all the people in Syria and in quote unquote Palestine, anybody who's anything, anybody who isn't into the Islamic crap hole thing has gotten out of there. And you meet them all over there. You'll be, you know, some doctor will be seeing you in London, and he turns out to be Syrian or Palestinian or whatever. Anybody with anything going for them gets out of that place. So I don't understand. I think Israel is in a tough spot. But I think, you know, the point that Tucker makes and the point that Candace Owens make, I think is fundamentally, you know, is fundamentally wrong. The idea that somehow it's Israel that is manipulating America into these wars that it can't win. Yes, America shouldn't be getting into wars that it can't win. And that basically means any war. but I don't believe that's anything to do with Netanyahu. And I don't generally subscribe to the... I mean, Jews are their own worst enemy because, you know, it's a conspiracy theory that Jews control the media. Oh, yeah, well, they just called for the firing of Tucker Carlson because he discussed the Great Replacement with Mark Stein. Well, the Great Replacement is a thing. When you've got 2 million people walking into your country year after year, and they're all from places nobody would recruit from, you know. Anyway, but I don't know where. I think it's interesting, as I said, the left became anti-Semitic, and now we're basically seeing that the right are joining them in that. I think that's probably bad news for Jews in the sort of in the big picture. But I don't really know enough about Candace Owens to be able to say what she's doing. Toby Pilling says, Tolkien describes the lost arts of the high men of Numenor, who could once raise the towering statues of the Argonauth, but whose descendants have forgotten the lore of their construction. We can't even write operas or chisel out decent sculptures anymore. How can we arrest this decline? Well, you're never going to arrest it as long as you hire people. You look at all the people like the guy with the radioactive waste, he's bald. Does he have a mustache? I can't remember now. He's bald with or without a mustache, and he wears a dress, right? And that's why he was hired. And like the same with Admiral Levine. Admiral Levine was hired basically because Joe Biden wanted to rub a bad tranny in your face all day long. We should really get that bad tranny of the week spot going, because we went to the trouble of making a jingle for it. So anyway, bad tranny of the week, put that on my to-do list. If you hire people on that basis, eventually they're everywhere. So you book on your Cadillac healthcare plan from Blue Cross Blue Shield, you decide you're going to go and have open heart surgery, and It's Admiral Levine who's performing the open heart surgery that day. As I said, we're approaching this. We've hired people for all the wrong reasons. Oh, yes. We've hired a surgeon mainly because she's a BPNIST woman. And eventually, as I said, the planes start dropping from the sky. And nobody else are our enemies, whether you think that's the Mullahs, whether you think that's China, whether you think that's Russia. They're not doing that. We're nuts. And by being nuts, it's not even you putting up statues or writing operas are relatively fringe activities. It's the guy who's flying your crappy commuter plane from Boston to Chicago is the thing to worry about. And we're already way behind in all of that. Have we got time for one more question? Maybe we got time for one more question. George Pereira says, Mark, Chrystia Freeland's mother was Ukrainian and her father is supposed to be a real-life Nazi. Here in the US, we have Victoria Nuland, also of Ukrainian extraction. And of course, Osaken, you see the Vindman twins. There are probably countless others. How does some place that didn't exist as a separate country until the USSR imploded gain such power in the US and Canada? Why have so many in the governments of the US and Canada supported the interests of their own countries to that of Ukraine? Well, in fairness, Ukraine, a lot of things that people think of as Russian are, in fact, Ukrainian. In fact, didn't I talk about this somewhere on the music show, the Carol of the Bells from Ukraine? And this is why my view on Ukraine is exactly what it was when I was talking on GB News in the first week of the Ukraine war. I said, Ukraine vis-a-vis Russia is a lot like Ireland vis-a-vis England. You know, in Ireland, there are people who want to be just Irish, and there are people who are think of themselves as Irish and British. And unless you recognize that there are those two groups, you can't make any useful contribution to the conversation. Now, in Ukraine, there are Ukrainians who just want to be Ukrainian, and there are others who think of themselves as both Ukrainian and Russian. The first chap I met when I crossed the border into Western Ukraine, which is as far as you can get from Russia in Ukraine, started speaking to me in Russian. But the point is that this war would never have happened except for Victoria Nuland and the Vindmans and co. But we made the mistake of not recognizing that, you know, Russia is the prodigal son prodigal child of Western civilization. Yes, it's a disaster. Its political institutions have been disastrous. But come on, it's got Gogol and Chekhov and Tchaikovsky and Rimsky-Korsakov. And I'm sorry, but, you know, that's better than Leonard Bernstein. You know, so the thing about it, the Tolstoy, you know, I could go on and on. So the idea of shutting out Russia, provoking Russia, driving, you know, teasing about Russia, or trying to provoke Russia into invading Ukraine. There's something very odd going on there. This idea that, and these things have their fashions, you know, the Afghanistan for a no account dump. Nevertheless, in the last half century, has tied down both the Soviet Union and the United States. So it preoccupied both the two. And somehow, and then, you know, basically America taking over Afghanistan was a disaster. The Taliban won everything that could be won. And so now that can't be the playground for this pointless great power meddling. But it is pointless because the effort should have been made in the early 90s to recognize that Russia is part of our civilization, and to treat it accordingly. Okay, that's a big thought. Probably I overpraised that thought, and it probably requires a little more of an extended treatment. But that's going to do it for our Q&A today. I'm going to be back here in a couple of hours with the latest episode in this season's big Christmas tale for our time, Mystery in White by Jefferson Fargin. We're rocketing towards the thrilling denouement. Stick with Stein Online for our regular Thursday date with Laura's Links. Laura Rosen-Cohen is going to round up the internet as only she can. And if you're still toying with the pros and cons of joining the Mark Stein Club, come on in. What have you got to lose? And don't forget, if you're thinking of Christmas gift ideas and you've left it a bit late for postal delivery, or your country, like Canada, no longer has postal delivery, well, your loved ones are going to thank you for a Mark Stein Club gift membership or a Stein Online gift certificate, both of which can be digitally delivered. Stay safe, stay free, stay well.
Stein's Clubland Q&A is a production of Mark Stein Enterprises and Oak Hill Media. All rights reserved.